This land is yours, land. This land is mine, land. From California to the New York Island, from the Redwood Forest to the Gulf Stream waters, this land was made for you.
Hello, everybody. This is Daphne Firehat this week with The People Speak, along with our board operator, Don, along with BBS Radio working in the background. Feel free to join us at Pal Talk by going to www.paltalk.com and downloading and installing the software. You create a nickname there, and that way you can be members of the virtual audience. Or you can listen to us via the bbsradio.com website. Click on the icon in the upper left-hand corner of the homepage on BBS Radio, and you'll be able to listen to our show live. Our guest tonight is like somebody that we are all thrilled to have, and I know everybody in Pal Talk has just been dying for this. Tom Kenny, who is an actor, comedian, writer, and a voice character specialist, but probably the most famous thing that Tom is known for nowadays is the fact that he is the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants. He's heard all over the world and in many different languages. Hi, Tom. Welcome to the show.
Hey, how are you? Although I should clarify, that is not me speaking all those different languages.
I have some
really interesting videotapes of SpongeBob in Japanese and German and Chinese and I got to say, the people doing the dubbing are really, really good, and I'm stealing from them liberally.
Isn't that funny? It must be strange to hear your character being personified in so many different languages, Tom.
It's funny because they're all kind of using me and my voice as a template, obviously, but, you know, they each throw every actor throws his own little spin on it, too. Like, the French person has almost like a little bit of a Daffy Duck lisp, you know, which
so they actually try to mimic your voice then.
Yeah, I think they use my voice as a jumping off place for what they're doing. But yeah, it's pretty interesting. I think if I spoke different languages, I could probably quadruple my income. But unfortunately, I'm monolingual.
Monolingual, that'll work. That's all right. You speak the language that everybody seems to have understood. Your character is just an amazing character. The SpongeBob personality is so sweet and so naive. Let me ask you, Tom, how closely related are you to that kind of image?
Well, probably as closely related as a vertebrate and a peripheran can be.
So you're not.
No, you know, I think when Steve Hillenburg, the creator of the show, who's a very interesting guy in his own right, animator slash marine biologist slash surfer. When he created SpongeBob, he and I had worked together on an earlier cartoon for Nickelodeon that was his first job in the animation business and also mine, a show called Rocco's Modern Life back in 1992. And we hung out a little bit from time to time after that. And I think when he was coming up with SpongeBob, he utilized some aspects of my personality in SpongeBob as well as aspects of other people that he knew. You know, SpongeBob is a little bit of a melange of different characters he's known, I think. Steve Hillenburg is known.
Well, Steven Hillenburg, what's he doing now? Is he still affiliated with the show that
surfing.
He created?
Surfing and traveling. Yeah, he's still the big kahuna. You know, he still oversees everything. But after many seasons of doing the show and also the feature film, I think he was ready to just hang out with his family and say, "Hey, I created this thing that's become pretty darn popular, and I think I'm going to go surfing it all over the world. I'm going to surf off the Isle of Sumatra just because I can."
Isn't that wonderful? You know,
it's
I have to admit to you, Tom. When I have three grandchildren, and when I first heard the term SpongeBob SquarePants, I looked at my kids. And I said, "Have they run out of names for cartoon characters? What is SpongeBob SquarePants?
Right.
What is that?" And as I sat and watched and grew with you and my grandchildren, you are such a part of our home and such a part of our life.
Well, good.
I mean, it's just a thrill.
You're a part of SpongeBob's Pineapple, too. Gary and I enjoy tuning in to people speak. Bah!
I love it. That laugh is just a killer.
Yeah, you know, originally SpongeBob, when we started to do the 7-minute pilot way back in 1997, which is hard to believe that SpongeBob's been part of my life for 10 years. SpongeBob and my first kid were born at the same time during, you know, they're both going on 10 years old. But he was originally called Sponge Boy, was the name
Sponge
of the cartoon and the name of the character. And then after we had recorded the 7-minute pilot with Sponge Boy and everybody calling him Sponge Boy and him referring to himself as Sponge Boy, the legal department found out that there was some kind of a product, like a mop or something, called the Sponge Boy mop, and they had to change it. So SpongeBob was kind of Steve's kind of last-minute fix, and then he gave him the last name SquarePants, which he had no last name when he was Sponge Boy. And it actually turns out to be a much better title, I think.
Well, I think it's wonderful, but I mean, I always remember when I said that to them, and I just laughed. You know, all of the characters on here are so wonderful, and the graphics are so amazing. I mean, you know, the crab Gary, or I mean the snail Gary with the eyeballs on the top, and the crab with the eyeballs there. I think you had a bad guy in there. I think his name was Bubble Bass or something like that.
Bubble Bass, yes.
Bubble Bass. I don't see him very often.
Yeah, he's not real frequently recurring. You know, I would say he's a C or a D list character, but once in a while they bring him back. But yeah, the graphics were one of the things that I immediately just fell in love with.
They are. They're adorable.
Yeah, like back in, you know, 96. Steve had me come over to his house, and he showed me some of the rough sketches and plans and character designs and character descriptions, prose descriptions of this show that he was thinking about pitching, and he had me in mind for the title character, but he had not yet shown it to anybody or pitched it. And I just immediately just loved it because it was, you know, kind of this, you know, this kind of cool mix of old 60s R-Crumb underground comics and, you know, Looney Tunes, Bob Clampett classic animation, and then it had kind of its own vibe going on at the same time. It was a really nice mix of elements. I really liked the way it looked. And then when I read the descriptions and just saw how weird and different and bizarre it was, you know, I just really got excited about it. This is before we ever recorded one line of SpongeBob, and I was just, you know, I had no idea that it would ever be commercially popular. Definitely not to the degree that it is. But I just really wanted to do it just because I thought it was good and funny and you know, classic. And those were really good times. You know,
anytime if you've had here and you actually describe these characters, you know, individually, people would sit there and look at just like, okay, you know, so where's the attraction? But the components being put together are just such a powerful dynamic. You can't help but fall in love with these characters.
Well, I think that's it, and they're very, you know, it's really, the characters are really very simple. I mean, you can come in. It's not like The Sopranos where you know, you have to watch all shows from every previous season to get in. I mean, you know, any kid, you know, if a country is just starting to get SpongeBob, you can watch any episode and you go, okay, SpongeBob, okay, the square yellow one is the naive, energetic person, and then his pink starfish friend is the dumb guy, the squid is the cranky guy, the crab boss is the greedy guy. Okay, I think I got everybody's number here.
And Plankton is the
Plankton is the tiny villain with the Napoleon complex and delusions
exactly,
of grandeur.
Exactly, exactly.
So it's pretty, you know, it's pretty easy to access, and I think it also works on different levels for different age groups. You know, there's, you know, some college kid with a, you know, with a Rasta tie-dye T-shirt sitting in his dorm room ingesting whatever, is laughing at things and seeing things in it that probably a 5 or 6 year old doesn't. But there's nothing so scatological or scandalous that it's a problem.
Except I have heard some stories here, and I'm going to have to ask you about.
Go for it. Yes.
Are you ready for this one?
Yes. Of course. When I refer to most people, I'm referring to sane people. And you're about to bring us into the realm of the insane.
The realm of the insane. I believe I'm trying to think here which it was. I'm trying to see here what the name of the church was. I guess there was some kind of a site. It was the Landover Baptist Church website that actually exposed that wrote an article exposing the artists of SpongeBob SquarePants, claiming that SpongeBob's nose. Well, it said SpongeBob's nose, but I thought to myself it was probably was Squidward's nose. Viewed upside down, looked like male genitalia. And I'm thinking, for Christmas sakes, is there nothing sacred anymore? Leave SpongeBob alone.
Well, I guess if you're uptight enough, there's a lot of things in this world that vaguely resemble human genitalia.
I would think so.
If you're examining cartoon characters for phallic shapes, I guess there is no shortage of them. Going back, 100
years.
Well,
this is what I said. I said, oh, my God, please leave SpongeBob alone. He's a sweetie pie. I just wanted to grrr.
Well, as someone with a fairly prominent nose myself, now I'm really self-conscious. But,
oh, no, please don't. And you're fine as long as you don't turn yourself upside down. That's right.
My face is hung like a horse. But I got to say, I hadn't heard about that one. I thought you were talking about the... the focus on the family, James.
Well, from what I'm seeing now in our virtual auditorium, and we have a great audience here, is that the Landover Baptists are actually atheist comedians, and this is probably was just some kind of a playoff.
Oh, great. See, I'm not, which I love that. That is the beauty of the Internet, is that it gives, clever, twisted pranksters a way to mess with the status quo.
Exactly.
I have to confess to not being much of a computer person at all. I've sent a handful of emails in my entire life, and it's hard for me every time. But I gotta say that now I'm definitely gonna check out the Landover Baptist Church site, because they sound like my kind of people.
My kind of people.
Energy.
Well, one of the other things that I ran across, too, was a little bit of trivia that I thought was interesting, that in one of the paintings of Painty the Pirate, there was some kind of a chromatic sequence where they actually imposed Steven Hillenburg's lips on the painting. Is that true?
They have done that, because the opening credits, there's an oil painting of a pirate that I believe is something that Steve found in like a thrift store, a Salvation Army or something years ago,
mm-hmm.
Some amateurish painting of a pirate, and he bought it, and then when it came time, they needed to animate clutch cargo type lips on this pirate painting, and they used Steve's lips, because the great thing about Steve Hillenburg is that he's as far away from being a showbiz guy as you could ever get. He's he doesn't like doing interviews. He feels very uncomfortable. He thinks he's boring. He doesn't, he just gets self-conscious and feels like that's not what he does. So that's him providing the lips on the pirate is about as close of a glimpse as most SpongeBob fans are ever going to get of Steve Hillenburg.
Let me ask you something, Tom. First of all, I know that from time to time you guys have used on the show voices such as Ernest Borgnine, Tiny Tim, and from my understanding, there's even a spot coming up sometime with David Bowie.
Yes.
And when you started this, first of all, these kinds of voices, is it difficult to introduce new voices to existing characters and kind of play that off of each other? I mean, after a while, you get used to working with somebody. And then you throw somebody else in the mix. How does that work? And How exciting is this? Did you ever imagine to be working with David Bowie on a cartoon before?
Well, you know, actually, Ernest Borgnine and Tim Conway were way more exciting for me than David Bowie. But, you know, much as I enjoyed David Bowie.
But, don't say that out loud.
David Bowie was exciting, but come on, Ernest Borgnine, come on.
I'm telling you, I love him. I'm a fan of him.
Oh my God, he's done so much great work in so many different areas, you know, Emmy winner, Oscar winner, and he's in so many of my favorite films, that meeting him really was a kick. But, you know, one of the things that makes the SpongeBob show a real pleasure to work on is that it's, you know, the recordings are done ensemble style. It's not like, you know,
actually working together.
Yeah, many shows do it, or especially animated features do it when they're using a lot of celebrity voices.
Right, right.
Which, don't get me started on those celebrity voices. But, you know, where you, one character comes in and they do that character's lines and they go, okay, that was a fun 15 minutes, you know, see you later, see you later, Ellen DeGeneres. And now we're going to bring in, now we're going to bring in the next person, Jay Leno.
Well, how many voices can you do?
What's that?
How many voices can you do?
I don't know, but if you Google me, it's kind of scary, I got to say. but you know, it's so fun to be in the room with the characters and really playing off each other and, you know, ad-libbing and having fun and you know, just it's really a nice way to work, and I think comedic things come out of it that wouldn't if one was just in the studio by oneself, reading your lines in a sterile environment. It's fun to have Bill Fagerbakke that plays Patrick, who I actually, I'm just coming from doing a session on the new Transformers series with Bill. We're working together on another series. But, you know, when he's standing right there, and he is Patrick, and Roger Bumpus that plays Squidward really is Squidward. And, you know, it's really...
So part of you, your personalities just have to come through somehow.
They do, and you know, Steve, you know, was very ingenious with his casting that way. Most of the actors that play the characters do embody their characters to some degree, not straight down the line, but you know, Clancy Brown that plays Mr. Krabs is a kind of a crusty, intimidating guy that you might not want to.
He has a heart somewhere under that shell.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely, a big heart. But if you rub him the wrong way, you don't want to be in a dark alley with him. And which is why he plays so many scary, psychotic preachers and prison guards in movies. But it's really fun, and you know, I like to think that we're a very welcoming cast. So anytime there's a guest voice, whether it's a celebrity or not, we're
who does, you know, Mr. Krabs?
Welcome to our playground. And Ernest Borgnine is just such an old pro, and he's done so much that he's just, you know, and he's got tons
of
energy.
The characters that they do, the superheroes, are
yeah,
so
the
adorable.
Elderly superheroes, which is, you know, pretty funny. Like Aquaman and Aqualad, you know.
I just thought they were the most adorable. Let me ask you something.
Sure.
The actual voice of SpongeBob, was that anything that you had played with prior to SpongeBob? Because you do work with voices. This is a technique, and from my understanding, you've had a lot of training in this. And was this a voice that you actually worked with prior to the character, or did you develop it for the character?
Well, if by training you mean getting sent to the principal's office every day in fourth grade, then yes, I have a lot of training. but it's fun to get paid for all the stuff that you got in trouble for in grammar school.
Isn't that something?
But I played with voices, and that was the SpongeBob voice was a voice that had been featured very sparingly for a really minor character in a crowd scene on Rocko's Modern Life. And I immediately forgot it as just, you know, some disposable voice. And you're just trying to make your voices not sound like each other. You're trying to make your voices sound very disparate, and because you don't want people watching the cartoon to go, hey, wait a minute, that robot sounds just like the Russian guy. So,
I just took my sort of bland, vanilla, natural voice and twisted it up and started talking through my nose, and
Steve remembered it. You know, I immediately dumped that mental file, and Steve remembered it when he was coming up with the character and you know, showed me the clip on Rocco and said, "That guy here, listen, concentrate. There's one guy in that crowd scene, and that's SpongeBob."
You know, I guess when you hear it, you know what it is. You know, that's often the case in a lot of things in life, I think. You know, you don't know what you're looking for, but if you heard it, you'd know it.
Very true. Very true.
And I think that's probably what he was looking for. He probably heard that, knew that that was the character, and just had to hear it again to solidify it.
Yeah, and that's the case with, you know, not just SpongeBob, but with a lot of, you know, animation creators, is that they, you know, as a journeyman voiceover actor, you're going in there and you're auditioning, and there's a bunch of other people auditioning for the same voice, and they're all very good and intimidatingly good, and you're just hoping that you're the one that gets picked. So you're looking at the picture and the character description there in the waiting room, and you're just trying to figure out, how can I just want to be the voice that this creator hears in his head. And since these creators are often very visually oriented and visual arts oriented people, they're not always real clear or able to articulate in words what type of voice they want to hear. And so it is a bit of a crapshoot, but it's also one of those things that the more you do it, the more you learn how to suss things out, and, you know, how far you can push it, which ones to take chances with, which ones to be a little more inside the box with, you know, a little more quote-unquote cliche with, you know, because you don't want to be so out there that you don't get the gig. But you want to have a little bit of extra zip in your read, or a little spin.
Well, I think you've got it down, Pat. I think you have just done such a magnificent job. Now, you know, before we go any further, we absolutely have to stop right now. I have three grandchildren, Jacob, Noah, and Alexander, and I promised them that SpongeBob would say hey to them.
Oh, sure. Hello, Jacob, Noah, Alexander, SpongeBob SquarePants here, coming at you from Bikini Bottom. Gary, my snail, is here, too. Meow. Good boy, Gary. Bop. Hope you guys are having a square day. The best day ever. The best day ever. Bop.
Thank you very much. You know,
you got it.
I told Mike, our producer of the show, I said, listen, if nothing else, you have to get me SpongeBob. I want my grandchildren to go through their life knowing that their grandma interviewed SpongeBob SquarePants.
Great. Cool. Well, you know, SpongeBob is honored to talk to Grandma, too.
Well, listen, no show is going to be complete without some more serious questions. You have more recently done, or SpongeBob, the character, was in The Endless Summer, Al Gore's documentary on global warming.
Yes.
And can you tell us, Tom, how closely SpongeBob or you got involved with them? Is it something that you have a vested attachment in, or is it just was it just a fluke that this happened? How does that work?
I guess I have a vested interest just by virtue of living on planet Earth. Everybody
Amen.
Has a vested interest, but not everybody thinks it's important. But yeah, you know, that was a case of Lori David, you know, big environmentalist and activist and wife of Larry David of Curb Your Enthusiasm, approached the show. You know, she has kids and approached the show and approached Nickelodeon. And I think that kind of message and that kind of, you know, environmental awareness is very much in keeping with definitely my leanings and Steve's leanings too, as somebody who remains very deeply interested in marine biology and marine science and the destruction of the marine environment. And yeah, it was really fun. We Nickelodeon commissioned some brand new animation and a little SpongeBob short, and it was fun to, you know, it was nice to know that, you know, this character that that you like so much anyway, that you enjoy doing so much as an actor, was also, you know, was also help spreading the word, hopefully, about, you know, about an important issue.
Well, you know, SpongeBob has joined the ranks of Leonardo DiCaprio, Jack Black, the Blue Man Group, and Will Ferrell in this cause of global warming. This is and recently we've seen that a lot of the Hollywood and the very pronounced famous people of the world. And I want to tell you that I think it's just amazing that you have used this character for such a worthy cause, especially considering character.
In the spirit of full disclosure, I guess I have to say that it's not really my character to lend to these causes. You know, it's all, you know, I'm the guy who does the voice, but, you know, I'm not the creator or the owner of SpongeBob. So I guess, we have Nickelodeon and Viacom and Steve Hillenburg to thank for using
SpongeBob's
for good.
Yeah, I applaud them, and you're right. And that's an interesting way of putting it, using the superpowers of the Hollywood scene, the television, the entertainment world, to encourage these kinds of these areas. We have a few minutes that we're going to be taking a break right now.
Okay.
And we will be back shortly with our character, with the voice of SpongeBob SquarePants, folks. Thank you all for joining us. And in about 2 minutes, we'll be back
with more The Sponges Speak.
This land is yours.
Join host Basima Farhat on The People Speak as she interviews guests from the realms of politics, activism, spirituality, science, and entertainment. That's Tuesdays from 8 to 9 p.m. Eastern on The People Speak, an audience interactive program where your voice counts.
This land was made for you and me.
Millions of people are doing it on Paltalk already. Meet new friends, see and be seen on webcams, and share files with real-time video and the ability to talk to all your AOL, MSN, Yahoo, and ICQ buddies from one list. Paltalk has it all. Join hundreds of chat rooms or start your own. Visit www.paltalk.com today and download the new messenger for free. Paltalk, communication beyond words.
In a world of abundance, hunger is a crime. When a malnourished child dies, we're all guilty. Yet it happens every 5 seconds. Let's do the right thing. Put hunger away for good. Please, give to the World Food Program.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to The People Speak. Tonight we're speaking with Tom Kenny, who is the voice of the infamous and famous character SpongeBob SquarePants. Tonight we also have a DVD giveaway for those of you that are interested in playing, and this is only available to the audience, members here in Paltalk. I wish we could offer it to the other areas, but it isn't going to happen quite yet. Let's see. The question is for the night, and the way this DVD contest works is we'll be giving away one of Tom Kenny's DVDs to the third person that answers this correctly in text in the virtual auditorium.
Great. Actually, I think it's a CD. I think it's a new CD?
Music,
I think it's the new music CD, The Best Day Ever.
Okay.
Which I wrote, you heard it from
Tom Kenny. And the question for tonight is, what is the name of SpongeBob SquarePants' pet sea snail? Now, the third person that answers that correctly, and we'll have somebody PM me the answer, the winner, in just a couple of minutes. So this is going to be a lot of fun. Now, one of the things that I wanted to ask you about here was I had read recently that the show is going to be broadcast. This is going to be the first American cartoon to be broadcast in Afghanistan, in Iraq after the U.S.-led invasion of those countries. Can you tell us anything, shed any light as to how and why and what how you managed to get this lofty position?
Wow, you know, I have to confess that I wasn't aware. I mean, I just lose track of all of SpongeBob.
I can imagine.
SpongeBob's global incursions, but, you know, I guess, you know, Steve Hillenburg told me an interesting story that sort of relates to how bizarre this all is. I mean, in the sense that, you know, way back in 1997, you start talking about doing a goofy 7-minute short that's kind of based on a bunch of drawings on a piece of paper on a guy's desk. And then, you know, 10 years later, it's this big, literally global phenomenon. And you kind of don't know how it happened. But Steve said he was surfing, and I believe it was the Isle, around the Isle of Sumatra somewhere. Mm-hmm. And he was outside some kind of a Muslim girls' school, like a school for girls. And mm-hmm. the day ended, and the door opened, and all these, you know, girls, Muslim girls with their burqas on, and their faces covered and all that, came walking out of the school, and he said many of them had, like, little sponge, you know, bootleg SpongeBob figures dangling from their backpacks and things like that. And it just blew his mind, because here he was at what to him was the ends of the earth, and this kind of benevolent Frankenstein that he created is there too.
Isn't that amazing?
It's pretty amazing, but yeah, I can't keep
it's almost words. Surreal if you think about it.
It's really surreal, but I guess, you know, hopefully if SpongeBob can be, you know, not to be corny or trite, or I'm certainly not trying to be, but if SpongeBob can be, you know, some kind of ambassador of silliness and goofiness and surreality and, you know, embracing those who are different and perhaps even a little freakish and being okay with your own inner freak, I think that's probably not a bad thing. I guess there's a lot worse things we could be exporting.
Okay,
and we are.
This is true. But I thought that was a fascinating thing. I mean, you know, I think that's actually a distinct honor because, you know, you have to understand the nature of what's happening back there. I think not only is this an incredible thing for the people of those countries, but also for our American soldiers over there.
Well, it's. I had a very, you know, kind of heavy experience a summer or two ago, two summers ago, where I did a USO tour, and I went to Walter Reed Hospital in D.C. or in Maryland. And, you know, they said, oh, you know, you want to go up and talk to these guys, these wounded GIs and maimed GIs. And I said, you know, I said, I know you guys got a pediatric ward. I said, those are the people that really care about SpongeBob. Bring me down into the kids' ward, and I think it'll have more meaning. I said, you know, for these, you know, these 21, 22-year-old soldiers, 24, 25-year-old guys, I mean, you know, they want to see a beautiful woman or a, you know, or like a rock singer or a country star or an athlete or something. They don't care about SpongeBob. And the person from the USO said, oh, I think you'd be surprised. And the first room that he walked me into was a young soldier who had encountered you know, he'd been caught in an explosion while he was riding in a Humvee mm-hmm. or something, and, you know, very, very severe injuries. And his, you know, sweet Midwest parents sitting there at the foot of his bed, and very, very affecting scene. And there on his bed, you know, he's got a SpongeBob blanket, and there's a SpongeBob plush toy, and, you know, it was really heavy and intense, because, you know, you tend to forget that these guys over there are not very far out of childhood themselves.
No, they're not.
And I guess I was thinking of them as being adults, and that maybe we should be down a couple of floors down in the pediatric ward. And, you know, SpongeBob has been on for long enough that these guys were kids when they started watching it, or at least, you know, were were pre-teenagers or young teenagers when their younger siblings were watching it. Or the other, you know, the other aspect is that a lot of these guys are very young dads and moms themselves. These people are young dads and moms themselves. So,
you know, that beat
so
right there happened.
SpongeBob's a part of their lives, and I guess I just wasn't prepared for that. I just wasn't factoring that in, and it was a very affecting experience, I have to say. And then, you know, that kind of recurred throughout the ward where these guys said,
yeah.
"Oh, you know, we have SpongeBob hanging inside our tank or inside our Humvee or hanging inside our tent, and he's kind of like a mascot, I guess, like Mickey Mouse or Bugs Bunny or whoever would have been, you know, in World War II."
You know, Tom, we have a caller that just called in. And just for those of you that don't know, you can call our toll-free number, 877-876-5227, and toll-free in around the world at 888-810-8322 and actually talk to ask SpongeBob a question. We have our first caller, Tom.
Okay.
And caller, could you give us your name, where you're calling from, and a brief question for SpongeBob?
Hey, my name is Mike from California.
Hey, Mike.
I wanted to ask Tom, do you ever get the urge to go in front of the camera besides just doing the voice? Because I watched the SpongeBob marathon a few weeks back, and I understand that you were the pirate on that hosted the show.
Yes, I do a character that recurs on the show from time to time. Called Patsy the Pirate. That's kind of a spoof of I don't know how old you are, Mike, but back in the 50s and 60s and all the way through the 70s and in at least in my hometown of Syracuse, New York, you know, there were these local kiddie show hosts, like the weatherman from the station would dress up like an astronaut or a cop or a sailor or something and host Little Rascals cartoons and Popeye cartoons and things like that. And Steve Hillenburg and I just got talking about those kind of guys and how that's kind of a vanishing, you know, in the corporatization of kids entertainment. You don't see the low budget, budget challenged kiddie show host anymore. So Patsy was our loving homage to that. But, you know, I actually did a fair amount of on-camera stuff before voiceover kind of took over in my life. And, you know, I started out as a stand-up comedian, both in Boston and for many years in San Francisco. And, you know, did a fair amount of TV. I did David Letterman and I did Conan. You know, this is all, you know, long, many years before SpongeBob. And was in a couple of shows, a series on HBO called Mr. Show with Bob and David that kind of has a pretty intense cult following. And, you know, did guest things on various sitcoms like Don't Shoot Me Just Shoot Me and shows like that. And I got to say, once the voiceover that I was dabbling in kind of took over more and more of a prominent role in my career, I was happy to give myself over to it because it's by far the most fun job in show business. It's one of those jobs that's so fun that you keep waiting for somebody to catch you at it and stop you. Hey, wait, you can't make a living like that. You can't buy a house doing goofy voices. You know, you're not allowed to have a car that you got from making weird noises with your mouth into a microphone.
I could tell them there's this big yellow sponge over there living there.
Yeah, right, exactly. So it's I have to say, I started out, you know, I kind of transitioned into voiceover, and I really don't enjoy the on-camera thing nearly as much. If I could continue to do voiceover until I'm an old dried up sponge myself, I'd be more than happy and grateful.
And I wanted
to
ask Tom, Tom, were you the class clown? And what are your high school reunions like? Do they?
Well, funny you should ask. I just had my the only one I've ever attended. My 25 year was last year. I think my class, which was Bishop Grimes High School in East Syracuse, New York, small Catholic high school, they had a 10-year class reunion, and then they didn't have another one until the 25-year reunion 15 years later, and I just couldn't afford to fly back east for the 10-year reunion, and it was a blast. It was so fun to go back there, and you know, a lot of these a lot of the kids, obviously, that I went to school with are people with children themselves, some of them with college-age children, because I got kind of a late start in that department. And but as far as being the class clown, it's funny. When people ask me that question, I have to say that I wasn't exactly the class clown, but I was the class clown's writer. I would feed material to the class clown. Hey, say this in math class, it'll be funny. I was kind of like a... but the class clown was Bobcat Goldthwait, the comedian, who was my friend. You know, we met each other when we were 6 years old, and we're still very close today. And he was the class clown because I was a little hesitant. You know, I worried more than him. You know, he would put it all out there, and he would just. I didn't quite like people looking at me all the time. You know. Undivided.
Well, I think this answers one of our audience questions. Dennis from Orlando in our virtual audience was asking, most actors get face recognition. I imagine you don't because your face is a cartoon. Do you regret not having the kind of fame, or do you like the anonymity? I think that kind of, you've just kind
yeah,
of
I mean,
answered that.
To me, and actually, you know, most people that work a lot in animation voiceover, and it's a fairly small pool, by the way. There's a relatively small pool of actors and actresses that do the bulk of television animation work, and I would say most of us, with only a couple of exceptions, see the anonymity as a perk. I definitely do, because you know I know famous people and I have friends that are famous, and I can't see me living that way. You know, it's fine for some people, and I think you have to have a special outlook on life and just realize that that's part of the trade-off that you make. And I think it would be a reduction in quality of life. I mean, obviously you'd probably be making a lot more money, but you know, someone who's on a sitcom or, you know, as a movie star.
But, you know, I think, too, it offers you a certain amount of a little bit of everything. I mean, you know, there are some people that are going to obviously recognize you.
Well,
and
when
there
somebody
are some
recognizes
that
me,
are not.
When somebody recognizes me, you know that it's a hardcore fan. You know, one of the I think one of the drags of being a celebrity is that you're recognized by everyone, by nice people, by knuckleheads, by people who like your films and want to say nice things, by boobs that want to say, hey, I didn't think your last movie was very good, Will Smith, you know. You know,
uh-huh.
For me, for anyone to recognize my face as being the voice of SpongeBob, it means that they've delved a little deeper into SpongeBobiana and actually watched, like, DVD extras and things like that behind the scenes. So I would say pretty much 100% of the time when somebody recognizes me and comes up to me, and it happens just often enough to be a nice little ego boost, but not so often that it's a drag. It's a really nice experience. It's really fun.
Well, I'm glad. You know, we do have a winner of the CD.
All right.
Noodles is our winner. Thank you, Noodles. And contact.
I love that name. It's like an old gangster movie name.
Oh, you should see some of them. We've got Bazooka Bob in here, and Adam Hart Mother, and Oh No, Not Again. We've got all kinds of characters in here, which brings us to another question. What was your favorite cartoon character growing up, Tom?
Well, my favorite cartoon character, you know, it's hard to explain to my kids that there was once a world where there were only four channels, and cartoons were only on Saturday mornings and for about an hour after school during the week. Maybe you'd see the Flintstones. And
I remember those days.
Right? I'm 44 years old. So, yeah, I definitely grew up in the pre-cable era. And, you know, now there's, you know, how many, gosh, at least a handful, if not more, of TV stations that run cartoons 24/7. But, you know, I loved Bullwinkle and Rocky, the Adventures of Bullwinkle and Rocky, and I loved all those voice actors, June Foray, who's still with us and still works all the time and still sounds remarkably the same as she did as Rocky the Flying Squirrel. And she's also Cindy Lou Who in the Grinch special, of course. But I like that. I loved all the Looney Tunes. But my real obsession as a kid, and kind of still is, I'm ashamed to say, was Popeye the Sailor Man, Popeye.
Oh, my God, I love Popeye.
I loved him. I just love Popeye so much, and I'm standing here in an office in my house, in my office, just surrounded by Popeye bric-a-brac and all things Popeye.
It works for me, Tom. Tom, we've got another caller in our audience. Caller, can you please give us your name, where you're calling from, and a question for Tom?
My name is Tisha, and I'm calling from Houston, Texas.
Hello.
Hi.
And what's your question?
When's your new episode?
When are new episodes coming out?
Hmm.
Well.
When's your new episode?
Well, we're recording.
Well, thank you, caller.
We're recording them. You know, it's kind of up to Nickelodeon Network how they parcel them out. We're definitely recording new ones and every week and going in, and the episode that just aired recently, called The Best Day Ever, was a new episode, and I'm told that gave Nickelodeon the highest rating in the network's history. Which was kind of a relief to me too, to know that even, you know, five seasons in, SpongeBob still has some life left in him. Because I got kids to put through college.
Well, I certainly know that. One of our audience members, Tushurb, who is a great fan of the show, has a question for you, Tom.
Sure.
He wants to know, do you wish that you could have more control of the message of the show? And if so, what message would you like to project?
Wow, that's a really good question.
yes,
well,
it is, actually.
It's funny. I don't think SpongeBob really is a show that has a message, nor is it intended to. And, you know, it's not really a platform show. It's not Captain Planet or one of these shows that's about saving the Earth or environmentalism or anti-war or whatever. Although I think just by virtue of the characters being who they are, that message winds up getting sent anyway. You know, I've been asked by people, you know, what is the message of SpongeBob? What message is SpongeBob sending? And it's kind of what I mentioned to you earlier, Bassima, that you know, I think SpongeBob is largely a show about not being afraid to be different, to be a little odd, to be out of step with the people around you, because people will like you anyway. And I think that's really a great message for kids who often feel awkward and weird and self-conscious. And here's SpongeBob, who is, you know, a freak, to use that word again, and literally square, plays by the rules, works really hard at his job. He's underpaid and overworked, but he gets he derives his pleasure from the satisfaction of a job well done, and his friends, who, except for Squidward, who's completely irritated by SpongeBob's positivity, you know, SpongeBob's positivity drives Squidward absolutely insane, because, you know, can-do positive people are always driven mad by those of us that are a little more idealistic. They just don't understand where we're coming from and think we're blind fools. But, you know, none of that is really ever discussed in the show or in the writer's room. But, you know, I think like all comedy, there's things going on under the surface that are sort of subconscious. And
well, I think you've touched on something that's just really true, that here it is, this guy that it's okay just to be a nice person, too.
Yeah.
You don't have to be this crazy, weird, whacked out kind of a subculture freak, and you could just be a normal, ordinary person, and it could work.
Hello? Yeah, or an abnormal, non-ordinary person, and it can work.
And it could work. Exactly. You know, we have another caller, your name, where you're calling from, and if you have a question for Tom.
Rita?
Hello?
Rita from Houston, Texas.
Hi, Rita from Houston, Texas.
I just had a question. Is SpongeBob gay?
Is SpongeBob gay?
Gay.
Well, I guess the shorter answer to that is that He doesn't have any sexuality because he's a drawing. But, no, I think, and I guess in the natural world, sponges are sexless as well. I have to bone up on my Discovery Channel. But I think sponges do not procreate to reproduce. But, no, you know, and that question has come up before, what is it, this Focus on the Family group, James Dobson, who's just, you know, but they got the idea in their heads that SpongeBob and other cartoon characters like Barney the Dinosaur and Miss Piggy and Clifford the Big Red Dog were trying to inculcate American youth into an alternative lifestyle that they didn't agree with, but which is just, you know, laughable.
Actually one of our audience members just before Rita had called was asking the same question. What about the Patrick and SpongeBob gay controversy?
Yes, exactly. And that's, you know, I guess, you know, the thing is to the writers in the room, like when that happened, we were rather surprised by it because for one thing, we never, you know, obviously we never thought of it that way. And, you know, I know from, you know, when Steve Hillenburg and I had discussed it at the time, When that story broke, we were just going, man, Steve and I both had sons who at that time were 5 or 6 years old, and there's that time in a kid's life when, and it evaporates pretty quickly, where you actually can hold hands with a friend of the same sex, and nobody looks askance at you, and none of the other kids make fun of you or call you names, and, you know, that's what kids do. You see little girls holding hands with each other and little boys holding hands with each other. And there's something kind of sweet and funny about it. And we always thought of SpongeBob and Patrick as being very unself-conscious about that, too. So, you know, they're supposed to be kids. They don't have any sexual orientation yet because they're mentally 6 or 8 years old. So I guess that's hopefully that sort of answers your question, but we
I think you tackled it beautifully.
Yeah, we always looked at
the controversial, you know, even to comment on it in some way, shape or form tends to add credence to it. And I think really anymore we have so many like the other day with they had the Penguin movie. What is it? Happy Feet, I believe.
Uh-huh.
There's this big conservative controversy that we're trying to encourage, that we were trying to shove down the throats of conservative people. The fact that that global warming was affecting our world and that we were indoctrinating their children, and it was like this big thing on CNN. And
wow. Well,
it really was. It was just amazing, and I just couldn't help laughing as I was driving home listening to this.
Well, I don't know that conservatives can tap dance either, you know? do conservatives really know how to dance? You know,
no, actually, they do tap dance quite well around a lot of issues.
I serve that up to you. I serve that up to you, Basima, and you walked into it beautifully. I was hoping you would say that.
Absolutely. They tap dance right around everything they want to tap dance around.
But no, yeah, you're right. Like in terms of the, you know, the orientation of imaginary children's characters, it's definitely more an issue for these, you know, for those twisted psyches than it is for us. We don't really think about it.
You know, we have a character in here that has changed his nickname to SpongeBong Hemp Pants.
All right. Gotta love SpongeBong.
And I just, you know, we laugh a lot of times when some of these things happen in here. This is really a wonderful experience. The Pal Talk people have just been loving this all the time. People in Political Junction tonight were clamoring to get in here. It was been a lot of fun. You know, maybe you could, do you have any of the other characters? I know you play a couple of the other characters.
Yes, I do.
Give us a couple of voices and maybe apologize to Alexandria for calling her Alexander.
Oh, yes, that's right. Sorry, Alexandria. I gave you a new name But I know you're Alexandria. I said Jacob, Noah, and Alexander, I believe. And I have to correct that and say Alexandria, 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 Alexandria. Well, I already said it four times, Gary. Don't rub it in. Stop.
Yeah, I do. It's one of the things that's a blast about this job is that you get to work on so many different shows of different types and for different audiences. Everything from, you know, preschool shows that you do that I do for Toon Disney and Nick Jr. all the way up through SpongeBob and to things like that's on Adult Swim on Cartoon Network, stuff that's a little more adult oriented and scatological, mm-hmm. which it's fun to do that stuff too. and it's fun. Gosh, let's see. On SpongeBob, I do SpongeBob. I do Gary.
Meow.
Who pretty much is a snail of one word.
Meow.
I do the Jacques Cousteau French narrator that sometimes narrates a show.
I do. I don't know him. I've never heard him before.
Oh yeah, he's more of an unseen narrator. 4 hours later. Steve Hillenburg, Jacques Cousteau is one of Steve's great idols, so we tip the hat to him. And let's see, Patsy the Pirate I do. And that's just on SpongeBob. I do a show called Foster's Home for Imaginary Friends, where I do a big purple monster that speaks a Spanglish, and his name is Eduardo. And let's see, what else do I do? I do so many. I do Scoutmaster,
no
fish on Camp Lazlo.
Your kids must just absolutely love you. They must have so much fun with this.
That depends on the day. I think my kids enjoy it. You know, my dad was an accountant for an air conditioning firm, so I think I got a little cooler job than my dad did.
Absolutely. Listen, you have got one of the coolest jobs to kids, as far as I can tell.
It's
you know,
great.
This has been a wonderful.
I wouldn't want to
do
anything
else. This has been a wonderful
else.
Show, Tom. I really appreciate having you with us tonight. I know our Pal Talk audience appreciates you. As you can see, the people speak with SpongeBob SquarePants tonight. Next week, the people will be speaking with Ward Churchill, the controversial professor. And I'm telling you, this is a load of fun. Download Pal Talk, www.paltalk.com. Or join us at bbsradio.com to hear the shows, to be with us, to interact with our guests. Again, Tom, thank you very much.
Well,
it's
thank you, Beth, and congratulations.
Wonderful.
Congratulations to our winner. And I did want to just get a plug in right here at the end for that SpongeBob CD, which is called SpongeBob SquarePants: The Best Day Ever on Nick Records. You can buy it. Online, I wrote all the songs for it, so I have a vested interest in it, and I really.
Is it actually in SpongeBob's voice?
It's SpongeBob and his friends. It's kind of a cast album, but it's all original songs that we wrote. You know, SpongeBob and his friends have a band, the way that the Archies or Alvin and the Chipmunks or whatever had a band. And
oh, how fun!
We just had a blast writing original songs and giving each character a big show-stopping number, and we were able to. Again, because SpongeBob enjoys such goodwill, we were able to, despite our low budget, call in a lot of great guest stars like Brian Wilson from the Beach Boys and Flaco Jimenez, the Grammy-winning Mexican accordion player Mexican-American accordion player.
Have to be politically correct with that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, yeah, I know. I have to say that because he was born in the States. He was actually born in Texas. So he
well,
was.
Well, that sounds wonderful. Well, thank you,
it's
Tom,
wonderful.
For being
it's called
with
The
us.
Best Day Ever, and please
and congratulations
go online and buy
on your career. Congratulations, and good luck with your CD.
Well,
we thank you, and that's all for tonight, folks.
Thanks for making it easy on me.
It's been a pleasure. Bye-bye, SpongeBob.
Bye.
Goodbye, Bassima.
Absolutely wonderful. Thank you very much. We'll see you guys all next week. Join us at Pal Talk and BBS Radio.
One bright sunny morning in the shadow of the big wall by the relief of that I saw my people and they stood there hungry and I stood there wondering if this land was made for you and me. The display.